Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, we're going to skip ahead a bit. This is which verse number? Okay, yes, we'll start there. Okay, now. Yes, that's good. So today we'll be doing a little review of what we've read in chapter 1, a little looking ahead to chapter 2, and preparing for some very nice classes in famous verses that are coming up this week, some of the most well-known verses in the second canto, and giving you also somewhat of an overview of what we'll be studying in Summer B. Okay? So this is a little bit of a kind of a reorganizational class, if you will, to get us oriented. But for now, let's do this, chapter 2, text 1. Okay? Shri Sukha Uvacha. Evam puradharanayatma yonir. Evam puradharanayatma yonir. Nashtam smritim pratyavarudhyatushtat. Tatasa Raja Dhamma Moga Drishtir Yatap Yayat Prag Vyavasaya Buddhi Evam Puradharanayatma Yonir Nashtam smritim pratyavarudhya tushtat. Tatasa sarje dhamma moga drishtir. Yatap yayat prag vyavasaya buddhi. Shisuka uvacha. Evam puradharanayatma yonir Nashtam smritim pratyavarudhyatushtat Tatasa sarje dhamma moga drishtir Yatap yayat prag vyasasaya buddhi Evam puradharanayatma yonir Nashtam smritim pratyavarudhyatushtat Tatasa sarje dhamma moga drishtir Yatap yayat prag vyavasaya buddhi. Anyone else? Evam puradharanayatma yonir. Nastam smritim pratyavarudhyatushtat. Tatasa sarje dhamma moga drishtir Yatap yayat prag vyavasaya buddhi. Anyone else? Shri Sukha Uvacha.
evam paradharanayatma yoni yastam prasitim pratyabhavrud yatushtat tatasa sajedam amoga drishtir yatapya yat pragavisaya buddhi. Very good. Anything else? Anyone else? The ladies, come on. Evam paradharanayatma yoni. Oga drishti yatap yayat prag vyavasaya buddhi. Very good. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, evam, just in the same way, pura, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, dharanaya, by such a conception, atmayoni, of Brahmaji. By the way, can anyone explain why atmayoni refers to Brahmaji? Yes, yoni means what? Womb. It means, yes, womb. So atmayoni, one who is self-born. Brahma. Nashtam, lost. Smritim, remembrance. Pratyavarudhya, by regaining consciousness. Tushtat, because of appeasing the Lord. Tata, thereafter. Sasarja, created. Idam, this material world. Amoga drishti, one who has attained clear vision. Yata, as. Apyayat, created. Prak, as formerly. Vyavasaya, ascertained. Buddhi, by intelligence. Excuse me, just plain intelligence. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Who would like to read? Do we have a mic up? We can get a mic up. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, formerly, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, Lord Brahma, by meditating on the Virat Rupa, regained his lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before. So, before we read the purport, I just want to go back to the translation for a moment. This is a very pivotal verse. It's giving us the transition from chapter 1 to chapter 2 of the second canto, which is natural. It's the first verse of the second chapter. But just, what was the end of the first chapter all about? Yes, the end of the first chapter of the second canto. It's all about the Virat Rupa, the universal form. We'll review that in a minute. But yeah, that was the first step in God realization. So now the subject matter is shifting to the history of Lord Brahma and how he created the cosmos. So all of this is foundational to understanding Krishna's pastimes. This is why we study the earlier cantos before the 10th canto. And this subject of creation is discussed at great length in the 2nd and 3rd cantos. But this verse is very beautiful because it packs in almost like codes, what has happened and what's going to happen. Now, this last sentence, thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before. See, somehow the subject now has switched to Lord Brahma. It was about the Virat Rupa, now it's about Lord Brahma. Why is the switch? He didn't ask. He's just going on to explain logically the subsequent steps about self-realization. So Virat, meditating on God as everything is the Virat Rupa, and then he's saying Brahma did that, and thus he was able to regain his consciousness, and thus he was able to create this universe. So all of this presages what is going to come in the subsequent, really the rest of the second canto. It's all about this topic, this very sentence about Lord Brahma creating the universe, how and why and how he was instructed. So, read the purport. Who would like to read? Daniel, would you?
The example cited herein of Sri Brahmaji is one of forgetfulness. Brahmaji is the incarnation of one of the mundane attributes of the Lord. Being the incarnation of the passion mode of material nature, he is empowered by the Lord to generate the beautiful material manifestation. Yet due to his being one of the numerous living entities, he is apt to forget and of his creative energy. This forgetfulness of the living being from Brahma down to the lowest significant ant, is a tendency which can be counteracted by meditation on the Bharat Rupa of the Lord. This chance is available in the human form of life, and if a human being follows the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam and begins to meditate upon the Bharat Rupa, then revival of his pure consciousness and counteraction of the tendency to forget his eternal relationship with the Lord can follow simultaneously. And as soon as this forgetfulness is removed, Vyasaya Buddhi, as mentioned here in the Bhagavad Gita 2.41, follows at once.
Okay, let's time out there for a moment. Can anyone quote that verse from the Bhagavad Gita? Nice and loud. For the first line, please. Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. That's the first line, yes. Yes, one whose intelligence is focused, Yavasyatmika Buddhi, Ekeha Kuru Nandana, those who are actually intelligent are one pointed, they just want to serve Krishna. But Bahushaka Hinantascha, those who are interested in so many different things, Buddhaya Vyavasayanam, their intelligence never becomes focused. See? Many branched, yes, Bahushaka. Very good. So this is also similar to the Sanskrit in this verse, Vyavasaya Buddhi. In other words, spiritual life means just focusing, putting a priority on God, and letting everything else come of its own accord. See? Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Okay, please go ahead.
This ascertained knowledge of the living being leads to loving service to the Lord, which the living being requires. The kingdom of God is unlimited, therefore the number of the assisting hands of the Lord is also unlimited. The Bhagavad Gita in chapter 13, verse 14, asserts that the Lord has his hands, legs, eyes, and mouths in every nook and corner of his creation. This means that the expansions of differentiated parts and parcels, called jivas or living entities, are assisting hands of the Lord, and all of them are meant for rendering a particular pattern of service to the Lord. The conditioned soul, even in the position of Brahma, forgets this by the influence of illusory material energy generated out of false egoism. One can counteract such false egoism by invoking God consciousness. Liberation means getting out of the slumber of forgetfulness and becoming situated in the real loving service of the Lord, as exemplified in the case of Brahma. The service of Brahma is a sample of service and liberation distinguished from the so-called altruistic services, full of mistakes and forgetfulness. Liberation is never inaction, but service without human mistakes.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Isn't that wonderful purport? So, Lord Brahma became liberated by rendering his service to Krishna, and his service was not chanting and dancing and doing arti and eating prasadam, but his service was what? Creating the universe, right? So this is the point. Like George Harrison asked Srila Prabhupada, should I shave my head and move in the temple? He was inclined to do that. And Prabhupada said, no, you make music for Krishna. And so many, many people as a result learned about Krishna consciousness. I know that was the first time I ever heard the Hare Krishna mantra in My Sweet Lord. So, the living being requires service. One of those beautiful statements Prabhupada said here. We require it in order to make the transition from false egoism to self-realization. And that wonderful opulence of service to Krishna is something that makes that transformation possible. You know, we have this very short time in the ashram. I was thinking about this morning, all of you young people. You have this very brief window of time in your life when you live in an ashram. It really is rare for a person to live in an ashram for an extended period of time. You have to be either really dumb, really poor, really spiritually advanced, or a combination of all three. So while you're here in this situation, the art of devotional service, same thing as Brahma is learning. That's what we hope you can take away. It isn't a question of just avoiding your nature or your obligations or your duties in life, but rather learning how to use them for Krishna's service. There's no other sustainable way of life in this material world, to maintain, I should say, spiritual life in this material world. There just isn't any other way. Because as Arjuna wanted to get out of his duties, and Krishna said, you could not fight, or you could leave this fight, but you'll end up fighting anyway, because that's your nature, that's who you are. And speaking to you from the other end of this ashram experience, you know, kind of like getting back into it in the fag end of my life, I can just say that it's a long time between, you know, your first initial years in the ashram, and then when you're like getting towards the end of your married life, is just it is a vast plateau. You know, it's very easy to make spiritual advancement when you're in this stage. You get in the ashram, everything is new, everything is exciting, and you can so easily increase your austerities, increase your hearing and chanting, or not. But I mean, the options are there to do it quite conveniently. Whereas after some time, the complexities of life just start to mount. Some of you are experiencing this already, you know, entanglements of finance or legal or business or family or whatever. They just start to pile up in such a way that you don't have that flexibility anymore. So then whatever you have gained in those ashram years will be like your friend. Any verses that you're memorized will be like your good buddies. You can pull them out anytime and call on them for consultation. And any passages of scripture you remember, any kirtans or really blissful experiences that you had, you know, then they strengthen you when you're in these dry, mundane, entangling material situations. And you wonder, what am I doing here? How can I possibly remember Krishna in this situation? Just knowing that Krishna is available, and if we take shelter of him, he's always there. That is a strength that lets you go through this very long, extended period of life in this material world. It really is, you know, it makes life possible, tenable, in those years after you leave the ashram. So I just was thinking this morning how precious it is to be able to go to Tulsi Arti, you know, and to be able to hear a Bhagavatam class, and to be able to have a kirtan with devotees. Yes, you can have a kirtan in your home, in your apartment, with your deities, and you can chant the same mantras, and you can cook something and offer it. It all goes on, and that's like hanging on to the life rope, you know, the life preserver. But when you can do it in wonderful association and do it every day, and everything is just all set up, it's an excellent way to put in memories into your subconsciousness that will sustain you for your life and enable you to go back to Godhead. So we're reading about this mechanical, these early steps, the Virat Rupa. And we could just go through these verses one after the next, but because your time is so short, I feel compelled to try to give you more of an overview of Bhagavatam. So, as I've said many times, when I moved into the temple, we were all lifers, and so we had our whole lifetime. Yeah, we can go one verse a day. No problem. You know, but we could spend the rest of the summer basically on the Virat Rupa and hear the same verses quoted many times and so forth, but there's just so much more. So that's why I would like to expand your knowledge of Bhagavatam a little and leave it to you later to fill in the gaps. Is that all right? Okay, so any comments on this much? If not, if you kindly pass these out, I'm going to ask you to read with me a review of the first chapter of the second canto. It's on page 133 in this book. Yes, Olivia. Yeah. Yes.
I have this idea that as long as I sincerely keep trying to surrender to Krishna and focus on spiritual life, then Krishna will just take care of my material life.
That may or may not happen. In other words, Krishna may want us to engage in other ways, you see. Your idea is exactly right, that first, try to focus on Krishna. And that applies in any circumstance, anytime, anywhere. And then, try to understand what it is that Krishna wants us to do. See? Because what Krishna wants us to do is not always exactly the same thing. What he wanted Arjuna to do was go and fight. You know? And what he wanted Duryodhana to do was not to fight. You know? So, after putting our emphasis on Krishna, then trying to understand what it is that Krishna wants us to do. That's the next order of business. And it's not the same. It just is unique for every individual, the jiva. See? So then you said, well, Krishna will take care of my material needs. That's true in ashram life. And it is very convenient for that reason. No, because we're in a space in our life where we can say, all right, Krishna, I'm just depending on you. And then I'm willing to live very simply. I'm willing to take whatever simple things you provide. And then we get to a point where the prasadam does not seem spicy enough. Or somehow, you know, the ashram just doesn't look quite as appealing as it did. And that's all right. That's perfectly natural. And that's just Krishna telling us it's time to go in to the next phase of our life. But Krishna does take care of the material side of it, but he puts us to work, you see, in doing that.
What if you feel like your calling is something like you just want to spread the holy name, you just want to go and do kirtan everywhere, or you feel like you just love being a pujari, like things like that. Mm-hmm. I feel, I don't know, it, to me it's like ideal, but at the same time financially.
It is possible to do those things, and some people do that, and there are a great many sacrifices entailed in it. But there are many devotees, men and women, sannyasis and pujaris, and people who just say, this is all I want to do. I'll take any material inconvenience required. If I can just do that, just stay in the temple and be a pujari for the rest of my life, just travel everywhere and spread the holy name. I'll have no residence. I'll have no bank account. I'll have, you know, I'll just do whatever, take whatever opportunity Krishna gives me. So people who do that are highly advanced, but not everybody can do that, nor does everybody need to do that. See? So we should just ask Krishna to reveal to us what it is he wants us to do. This is what the meaning of Hare Krishna mantra is. Please engage me in your service. And then have no conditions. We were talking about in the japa seminar. No conditions about exactly how Krishna answers that prayer. We just make it with all our heart, and then we depend on Him for the answer. See? So if you're feeling that way, then that's very good. Then just follow it as long as you can. And don't be down on yourself if you come to a point where you say, well, I don't really want to do that anymore.
It's like when you want to do something like that, along those lines, you know, or something like book distribution, mm-hmm. like you tell your parents and they're like, well, that's not a real job, you know. Like, how are you going to have support your kids with that? I'm like, I don't know.
Let's say, I'm not going to have any kids. I'm just going to go, you know. Yeah, well, that's a question that they ask because they love you and they are concerned, and it's a very good question. That's why I always advise, especially young men, don't even think about getting married until you can support a family. Seriously think about it. Okay, I'm going to get married. Okay, now what do? Now I get a career and an income so I can support a family, especially for young men.
So what if someone desires one of those, like they feel like one of those things is their calling, and they also want to get married and have a family?
Ah, well, men like that, they're advised to wear like a saffron kurta and a white dhoti. They're called brahmastras. Combination of brahmachari and grihastha. My dear friend Tamal Krishna Goswami told one of my brahmachari friends, he was about 30, been a brahmachari for many years, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked him, do you want to get married or do you want to stay a brahmachari? He said, I don't know. He said, that means you want to get married. A person who just wants to do these things recognizes the sacrifices involved and early on accepts, I am not going to be involved with family life. Okay? This is all I want to do. I'm not going to be involved with family life. This is very unusual. Okay, I mean, the word eccentric slightly applies, but not in the pejorative sense. You know, eccentric means out of the ordinary, out of the center. And it is a rare person who can just say that and feels it so deeply and be comfortable with that. Okay, so the economic necessities associated with family life are a reality. For most of us, they are our Kurukshetra, how we're going to fight the battle of our lives. And so we think, wow, I'm going to surrender to Krishna and have all these blissful devotional services. And then we end up with, well, I'm going to have to get health insurance. So how do these things, well, this is, Krishna is reciprocating with us, you know. Prabhupada wanted devotees to be spiritually dependent and financially independent as far as the relationship with ISKCON is concerned. Spiritually dependent means we don't go here and there and take this Baba and that guru and this, eclectic in our spiritual life, but take it in disciplic succession. And as they say, dance with the one who brought you. You know that expression? Somebody invites you to a dance, and then you get to the dance and say, thank you very much, I think I'll go dance with this other person. See, that's not very faithful. So in the same way, it's because of Srila Prabhupada there is Krishna consciousness in the West. And if we are fortunate to get his association, and then we say, okay, now thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada, for introducing me to spiritual life. Now I'll go to this one and that one. And do you see what I'm saying? So that's spiritually dependent. Take the knowledge coming into disciplic succession, but financially independent. And that is an austerity. But it's also an austerity to be financially dependent. See? So there's... The bottom line is there is no escaping austerity in this life. In fact, human life is meant for, yes, right, yeah. Animal life is meant for doing whatever, yes, and then for whatever you want, but then you're forced by circumstances. But human life means tapasya, voluntarily accepting, okay, my austerity. But it's very helpful to get guidance from senior devotees in these regards. And you're fortunate to have that because we didn't have that when I was growing up, you know. We were just kind of figuring things out and made a bunch of stupid mistakes. So we could try to help you avoid them. And it's wonderful to have a family in Krishna consciousness, you know. It's also wonderful to stay in the renounced order, in a renounced position. And both are wonderful. You can't go wrong. As long as you're putting Krishna at the center. Good question. Any other comments on that? The grihastha life can be very tiring and a difficult experience, yes? But how can it be wonderful? If our consciousness is wonderful, then grihastha life is wonderful. If our consciousness, yeah, that's what I think. If our consciousness is wonderful, then any situation is wonderful. And if our consciousness is poor, then any situation, no situation will be happy. When Srila Prabhupada was ill at the end of his life, he was having kidney failure. And the devotees said, why don't you come to Rishikesh, where the water is very pure. That's up at the high beginning of the Ganges. Or Haridwar, actually, said Haridwar. And Prabhupada said, we may go to Haridwar, but kidneys will still be there. That's why it said you cannot buy a ticket to Vrindavan, you know, because you may get your physical body there somehow or other, but you won't be able to enter the Dham because the consciousness is somewhere else. So, any situation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Yedina grihe bhajana deke grihete goloka bhaya. One day I was in my griha performing my devotional service and it all transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. That's because his consciousness was in Goloka Vrindavan. Yes, it's tiring. It's very tiring. Material life is very tiring. And there's no escaping it. You can't win, you can't break even, and you can't quit. So, yeah. I'm sorry to bring bad news to you, but that's why grihastha life can be very, very pleasant if husband and wife are committed to serving Lord Krishna. Then they help each other. The house becomes a temple. The deities become the center. The children are raised not as the center, but as devotees, and they recognize from the beginning of their lives that Krishna is the center. Okay. All right, so let's read for just a moment. This is a short section. Who would like to read page 133? This is a summary of the first canto, the first chapter of the second canto. Okay, please read. Page 133 at the bottom, chapter 13, the first step in God realization.
Canto 2 begins with Sukadev appreciating Vishnuradha's questions. Most people, he asserts, are too distracted by externals to even think of asking such questions. On the other hand, enlightened souls regularly discuss Krishna and thus resolve the problem of death.
I just want to interrupt for a moment. This is what we just finished reading over Summer A, in summary. Okay. Go ahead, please.
By describing and discussing Krishna, everyone, be they yogi, saint or sinner, can be purified and remember Krishna as they die, gaining access to the eternal abode of Krishna. In light of this, Sukadev points out the king's good fortune in knowing he has 7 days to live. Sukadev then advises the king to begin his immersion in Krishna by meditating on his universal form, the imaginary form of the Lord seen in nature. He says, the cosmos is his eye socket and the sun is high. His eyelids are day and light. Illusion is his smile. Rivers are his veins. Trees his body hair. Mountains stack of his bones. And the ever-shifting moon his mind. After explaining how to see Krishna in the universe, Sukadev cautions the king not to become attached to the material creation. The gods, he says, enjoy material pleasures in heavenly abodes as described in the Vedas. As you advance spiritually, you may become attracted to such a life. But I warn you, don't waste a moment chasing it. Live a simple life, accepting those things that come easily by God's grace. That will help you to continue to remember Krishna while living in a world of illusion. In conclusion, Sukadeva again confirms that Krishna consciousness is for everyone, the materialist, the ascetic, and the wise philosopher.
Okay, so this chapter actually covers a bit of the this summary rather covers a bit of the next chapter. First and second book. There's a little preview of the second, of the upcoming chapters. So we've read about the universal form. Maybe we'll take a minute, if you don't mind. We'll just go back to page, page 100. And we'll just read this condensed section, which covers what we finished in chapter 1. Okay? So again, the first canto, which we'll be studying in detail next semester, leads us to this dramatic moment where Shukadev shows up. Shukadev comes, there is King Parikshit, nobody can answer his question. Shukadev walks in, naked, being followed by a bunch of kids who are laughing at him, making fun of him, who think he's just somebody, some mendicant, some hippie, somebody, you know, with no social responsibility. And then when he arrives in this group of sages, because they know physiognomy, the science of reading one's face, they immediately recognize him as the most elevated soul, and they take him right to the dais and put him on the Vyasasana. And all the kids who are laughing at him just run away. So, and then King Parikshit again repeats his question, what is the duty of one who's about to die? And that's how, and Sukadev's smiling, and he begins his reply. That's how the first canto ends. So Sukadev doesn't say a word in the first canto. Then he comes out swinging in the second canto. Some of the very, very heavy verses. First things he says, condemning materialistic life. Sukadev replies, dear king, your very question is magnificent and deep and sows a field of wisdom for the hands of all to reap. The answers to your questions have already been endorsed by learned transcendentalists, so let us start our course. The ordinary person is materially engrossed with endless themes for gossiping and countless fools to toast. They chase down money in the day, have sex and sleep at night, and envy others till they die, while thinking all is right. Protected by the fragile troops of body, kids, and spouse, such people discount God and hope that death will skip their house. Eternal souls, though they may be, with many lifetimes past, they foolishly construct another life that cannot last. Enlightened souls, by contrast, rid themselves of worldly pain by hearing and reciting Krishna's pastimes and his name. The supersoul who dwells within is no one else but he, the mastermind of everything, who ends one's miseries. So whether it's by scrutinizing spirit wrapped in skin, or practicing some yoga till you grow austere and thin, or filling your commitments to your country, kin, and wife, to think of Krishna as you die completes a perfect life. Because of this, the topmost transcendentalists agree, describing Krishna's glory is the greatest ecstasy. When I was young and thought Lord Krishna something more abstract, my father taught me Bhagavad to help me get on track. Although I fully understood that I was not my flesh, the pastimes of Lord Krishna caught my ear and sounded fresh. You've asked me, so I'll speak them now, as Vyas once did for me. Your troubles will be finished if you hear attentively. For those who have renounced the worldly pleasures of this life, or people whose attractions for such pleasures are still rife, or even those self-satisfied by wisdom they have gained, can all succeed by constantly repeating Krishna's name. Recognize that verse? Yes, that's the Aitanya Vidyamanana verse. What use is it if you hang on until you're very old and waste 100 years without awareness of the soul? If you invest one moment asking who you really are and start your search for truth, you will be better off by far. The saintly king Kadvanga asked the gods when he would die. You'll die within a moment, said the gods in swift reply. The king was well prepared for death, and feeling no distress, he promptly thought of Krishna and attained complete success. My dear King Vishnurata, you are blessed with much more time. You've 7 full remaining days to concentrate your mind. Now you can meet approaching death without a trace of fear by cutting ties to body, kin, and all that you hold dear. Yes, even leading people we might honor and admire do not prepare themselves for death by changing their desire. Desire will continue even when the body dies, but if you just desire Krishna, death does not apply. The first step is to understand that death comes unannounced, so if you want to leave this world, you must become renounced. The self-control abandon all the comforts of their home and sit down in a sacred place, content to utter Om. Though meditation starts this way, there's so much more you see. The mind must be subdued, O King, but not repressively. God's form is more attractive than a pure but formless sound, so try to see the form of God pervading all around. Dear Sukadeva, the king inquired, how does one absorb the restless mind in Krishna as the all-pervading Lord? Said Sukadeva, the first step is to purify your mind. Use yoga stance and breath control. Your thoughts will be refined. Although Lord Krishna is much more, to start your meditation, consider him as he appears throughout the whole creation. His universal body's feet are planets known as hell. His head is formed of higher worlds, where pious persons dwell. The cosmos is his eye socket. The sun globe is his eye. His eyelids are the day and night that blink as time goes by. The Lord of Death lives in his jaws, rebuking every sin. His upper lip is modesty. Desire is his chin. Affection is his set of teeth. Illusion is his smile. And mountains are collections of his bones stacked in a pile. The trees and shrubs comprise the universal body's hair. The rivers are his veins. His breath consists of swirling air. The ever-changing moon becomes his mind, so it is said, and water-bearing clouds make up the hair upon his head. His artistry appears in birds, like peacocks in the rest. The singing gods exemplify his music at its best. His face consists of priests, his arms the fearless warrior caste, his thighs the wealthy merchants, and his feet the working class. As ordinary persons manifest 1,000 dreams, Lord Krishna lives in everything, in countless ways and themes. A person seeking liberation sees the Lord in all. In fact, there is no other place a person's glance can fall. So this is how the universal form chapter ends. Saying that even if you wanted to see something besides the universal form, what to speak of meditating on it. Even if you wanted to see something else, you can't, because everything comes from Krishna. And when the gopis in Vrindavan were feeling separation from Krishna, he gave them this argument. He said, look, everything you see is me, so how can you be feeling separation? But they didn't buy it. So that's a short review of our chapter 1, and we'll dive into chapter 2 and 3 this week. And most of the rest of the month we'll be spending on chapters 8 and 9, which are Lord Brahma's meeting with Lord Krishna, in which he speaks the four seed verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna, that is. All right, are there any questions or comments? Want to get back to that other discussion we were having? Yes. What is the meaning of life being a Kurukshetra war? Yeah. It means that all of us are obliged to do things, some of which we may not like to do. Isn't that, in essence, the Kurukshetra war? Nobody wanted the war. Some, maybe Karna and Duryodhana, you know. But everybody else was urging peace and trying to negotiate peace. Maybe a few of the kings on Duryodhana's side. So just like the Bhagavatam gives the example of fire appearing from the friction between bamboo. So in this world, there's always friction and things we don't want. If it was so nice and we got everything we wanted, why would we want to leave this world? So that's why a transcendentalist appreciates the setbacks. Vipadak, tatu, shashvad,
Tatra tatra jagat garo bhavatam darshanam yatsyat apunar bhava darshanam. Queen Kunti said that we had so many problems in our family, and now by your grace they're all resolved. But now you're going to leave. So please bring back the problems. We'd rather have the problems and you than no problems and no you. So, Sunanda Prabhu and I were discussing this morning, sometimes in this world there's so much anxiety that you can't sleep. Have any of you experienced that yet? Not in Bhagavatam class, anyway. You take these things for granted that, okay, when I go to bed at night, I'll fall asleep and then I'll wake up in the morning and wish I could sleep longer. But yeah, it comes to a point, sometimes it's just so much pressure and anxiety that your mind just will not stop. Nah, 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 nah. And you lie there and your body's saying sleep and your intelligence is saying sleep, but your mind is saying no sleep. Not until you figure out this, and figure out that, and figure out the other thing, and figure out, no, 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 no. And it is singularly unempowering to be unable to sleep or unable to eat, you know. Can you imagine? And this is what happens with time in this world. So this is like the Kurukshetra war. Prabhupada said it, at the end of his life, he made one comment. He said, he had not eaten anything in some weeks. And he said, I am not able to eat. I am not able to sleep. There is no question of mating. So, therefore, I am liberated. So, it's Kurukshetra for that reason. You know, it is a battle. My good friend Toshan Krishnan Prabhu was saying, at one point in Alachua there was a ladies' school, a girls' school that was run by Lakshmi Moni, but the boys' school had closed. And he was saying, well, this is actually a good situation because boys need to get out and learn how to compete in the world. They need to go to public school and they need to learn what they're up against to try to make a living. Whereas girls, if they are able to preserve the culture, they will inculcate Krishna consciousness in their children and raise them in a Krishna conscious environment. So both are very difficult tasks. But I thought that was an astute comment from a learned devotee. You know, there's just no avoiding the difficulty. So that's why it's compared to a Kurukshetra. That's why Arjuna is put in the most extreme condition to show that even then you can remember Krishna. Okay. Other comments or questions? Okay, go ahead. When the mind is disturbed, it becomes difficult to think of Krishna. Can you tell me that situation that we can change to so our minds will not be disturbed? I'm thinking suicide. Do you have any other suggestions? Do you have any suggestions? Have they discovered that in astrophysics, that state of being where there is no anxiety, something like 10 times the speed of light or whatever, I don't know how to calculate. It is just, there's two things. First, the nature of the world is anxiety, and secondly, the nature of the mind is anxiety. We cannot change the nature of the world, but we can gain control of our minds. And that's why chanting is so important. And also education, to know when something that we are perceiving is reality or it's just a product of our fertile imagination. See? And if we can control the mind by chanting, And as Burjan Prabhu writes, we should fire our minds. You know, no, you're fired. I am no longer engaging you. You're done. Goodbye. This is one strategy he gives for dealing with the mind.
And then if that doesn't work, he says, you can try to befriend the mind. Look, let's be reasonable here. This is not doing any good for anybody, okay? Or just tell the mind, look, okay, I know you've got a lot of concerns. We'll get to them later. Right now I'm busy chanting. Like Haridas Thakur. See, so we have an opportunity every day to chant Hare Krishna and practice controlling the mind. So if we take advantage of that opportunity to the maximum extent, it will really help us all day be much more peaceful. Because we put the mind in its place in the morning. And then before we go to bed, again we put the mind in its place. And that will help us when we wake up. So, those are some suggestions. It is a lifetime proposition to control the mind. It's not likely to happen by Wednesday, you know. It is another reason why life is like that, like Kurukshetra, because there's a constant fight, yeah, with the mind. And all of this sounds very unappealing. We don't really want to fight with our lives. We want peace, man. You know, look. This is how, yeah, this is how committed. This is a peace sign. Yeah, I'm always carrying this. I just wanted to see if the side of the truck was magnetic or not, to be honest. But that's just yeah, but it's very difficult to find peace. What does Krishna say about peace in the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah. Gyatva mam shanti mrishati, right? One who knows me as the best friend, the supreme enjoyer, and the supreme proprietor. The beneficiary. Yeah. In other words, if one knows that everything is meant for Krishna, then one becomes peaceful. If one knows Krishna owns everything, one becomes peaceful. Why does one become peaceful? Because one also knows Krishna is his best friend. So if your best friend owns and controls everything, then what do you have to worry about?